Now, we've all heard of Albert Einstein, of course. Well, in 1905, I think I told you last time that Albert Einstein was the inventor of this thing called the photoelectric effect, when he explained that light could actually appear as little bundles, little lumps of light, which were later called photons, and that explained how electrons came boiling off of metal when the light hit the metal. In 1905, the same year he came up with that idea, he also came up with the idea of the theory of relativity. And the word relativity may throw you, because what has relativity got to do with space and time? Well, we'll see what that is in just a short moment. But in viewing this theory of relativity, or coming up with this, Einstein completely changed the way we think about space and time. And that's what I want to talk to you about here, because it will help us understand some interesting aspects of not only quantum physics, which we're going to be talking about, but also how we can travel in space and time, and how traveling in time, forwards or backwards, can even be made possible. But before we get to that point, let me tell you a little bit more about what Einstein had done. Einstein was thinking about light, and he was saying, you know, light has to travel from there to here. If it's going to reach my eye, it's got to come from the lamp, let's say, and it's got to travel, because when I turn the light on, it doesn't just instantly pop into my head, hit my eye. It has to go a certain distance. And he had imagined what it would be like to get up from his chair and sit on a beam of light and ride it. And here's what he was thinking. Now you think about this yourself. You know, I'm going to put you in Einstein's head for a little while. Think about this. Einstein is riding a beam of light, which means he's moving at the speed of light. And he has in his back pocket a mirror. So he takes out his pocket mirror and he holds it out in front of his face at arm's length so that he can see, hopefully see, his reflection in the mirror. The question he asked himself is, would I be able to see my face in the mirror? Could I see my reflection? Now you might think, of course he could see his face. I mean, anybody could see their face by holding up a mirror. What's the big deal? What's the big deal? Well, think about it a moment. In order to see his face, what has to happen? Well, light has to first hit his face, then it has to reflect off his face, then it has to travel to the mirror, then it has to reflect off the mirror and travel back to his eye. All right, so that means wherever the light's coming from, it has to go to his face, back to the mirror, and then back to his face again. So it's three possible things that light has to do, one, two, three, to get to his eye. But he's moving at the speed of light. If he's moving at the speed of light, well, then maybe the light coming towards him from some other place would certainly be speeded up. But then when it reflects off his face, it's also moving at the speed of light. So he is moving at the same speed as the light coming from his face. So he's always moving with that light. And the mirror is, of course, moving ahead of him because it's one arm's length ahead. So just as he's never going to really reach his mirror because the mirror is arm's length ahead of him, the light, which is reflecting off his face, is never going to reach the mirror because it's always running right alongside of him. So as they run along, there's no light from his face ever able to reach the mirror. In other words, he ain't going to see himself in the mirror. When he looks in the mirror, what is he going to see? He's going to see nothing. It's Twilight Zone again, folks. And this is what got Einstein worried. He began to wonder, what is so special about the speed of light that I can make objects disappear if I were just moving at the speed of light? Now, this is what got him thinking, according to him. Meanwhile, back in the ranch, sometime in the late 18th century, I think it was 1880, 1890, I'm not sure of the exact date, there were two guys at the Case Western University in Ohio. These two guys were attempting to measure the speed of light. And what they wanted to do is not only measure it, they wanted to know What would happen if they moved towards the source of light or away from the source of light? Would there be a difference in the speed? That's what they were looking for. And you might think, well, why would there be any difference? Well, think about this for a moment. Suppose you're on a train and somebody who is on the side, on the tracks, throws a ball at you. Well, you're moving at, say, 60 miles an hour on the train. The ball is going to be moving at a different speed relative to you because, after all, the guy may be throwing the ball at, say, 5 miles an hour or something like that. But relative to you, it could have a whole different speed because, after all, you're moving past it or towards it or away from it. And so the change, that speed relative to you could change. And these guys were thinking, well, the Earth is moving and it's moving relative to any source of light. So maybe as the Earth moves, it could see a difference in speed. And what they found out is that no matter whether they were approaching the source of the light or moving away from the source of light, the speed of light was the same. It didn't make any difference. It was always the same speed. The speed of light is the speed of light is the speed of light, no matter how fast you're traveling. This got Einstein thinking. Well, he says he got this before he started thinking about this particular experiment. But nevertheless, the idea occurred to him that if the speed of light is the same for all observers, then how can we explain the apparent disparity that no matter how fast something moves relative to you and emits light, that light is always the same? It doesn't make logical sense unless somehow space and time are not fixed. And this is what Einstein's genius came up with. He said, change what we think about space and time, accept the experimental fact of light, and that will introduce the whole necessary transformation in our thinking that will explain to us how it is that we always see the speed of light moving the same way. Now, this was a revolutionary idea, but it wasn't really time bends and space warps yet. It was close, but there was something else that was needed. And the funny thing about this is that this came from one of Einstein's teachers. And this teacher's name was Hermann Minkowski. And in about 1908, while he was speaking before the German group of physicians and philosophers, it was called the Deutsche Naturforschung, Forscher und Ärzte, the German philosophers and physicians, a body that was used by scientists to disseminate the ideas of their individual disciplines to wider audiences, Minkowski gave a talk called Space and Time. And this is what he said. He said, gentlemen, of course I'm translating from German into English. He said, gentlemen, the ideas of space and time which I wish to develop before you grew from the soil of experimental physics. Therein lies their strength. Their tendency is radical. From now on, space by itself and time by itself must sink into the shadows, while only a union of the two preserves independence. Probably no other scientist other than this Hermann Minkowski, who, by the way, was a teacher of Einstein, created the myth of Einstein. I think this is where Einstein suddenly gets elevated. It's through Minkowski. He was largely responsible for all the early fame that Einstein received in Germany. And Einstein himself described Minkowski's contribution as the provision of equations in which the special laws of relativity take on a new form, in which the time coordinate plays exactly the same role as the three space coordinates, was a revolution. So this is what he did. Minkowski had taken Einstein's idea and created something new, which is now called space-time.